Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Dane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. This week, Dane is thrilled to welcome Jinja Birkenbuehl, a multifaceted entrepreneur involved in numerous exciting ventures. She writes essays for Fast Company, serves the CEO of Burke Creative, performs in a band, and hosts the Honest Field Guide podcast. In today's episode, listeners will discover, first, ownership across roles. Jinja emphasizes the importance of embracing ownership, explaining how taking responsibility for your projects can lead to transformative outcomes. She advocates for this mindset not only for entrepreneurs, but also for employees within larger organizations. Second, excelling at intentionality. Jinja delves into the power of intentionality in achieving work goals, explaining how deliberate actions and focused planning can lead to significant outcomes in any professional endeavor. Finally, the power of spontaneity. Explore how Jinja leverages spontaneity in her creative process and business strategy, fostering flexibility and innovative thinking in her projects. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group. And today I'm joined by Jinja Birkenbuehl. Jinja has a ton of cool things she's doing, writing essays for Fast Company, being the CEO of Burke Creative. There's a band, host of the Honest Field Guide podcast. There's going to be a lot of energy and excitement for us to explore today. So welcome to the show, Jinja.
Well, thanks for having me, Dane. That's so great.
Well, I'm enjoying learning about you, but our listeners are brand new to you and your story. So could you sort of give us a quick update on sort of where you've come from, where you're going, your story?
Absolutely. Yeah. So really, I'm so grateful to be on your show. We had such a great pre-conversation, and I just love talking to creative people. I love talking to entrepreneurs. I love speaking to people that own their own businesses. I mean, it really is part of the world that I'm in and I have been in for a very long time. I started my company back in about 1997, and I started my own company because, I'll just be really honest, I was already in corporate for a long time, and I realized going through a couple different places in corporate that I thought, oh, is this really the way I want to spend the rest of my life? So I started downsizing to work for smaller businesses like myself. I started working for a woman-owned business. I worked for a guy that I think he had like at the time 10 employees. And, you know, I started going from the big corporate of Anderson down to smaller. And even then I started thinking to myself, I don't really know if this is what I want to do. And part of that drive was because my husband and I actually formed a country band. And I realized that even though I'm a creative visual person, I'm a brand strategist, I also have creative ideas in other ways. And forming the band was one of the ways that I could express myself, you know, writing songs, playing guitar. But I also started the band like a business. And when I launched the band, I realized how much I loved launching my band. I was like, this is great, because I started thinking about how do I ensure, and this is before I had children, how do I ensure that if we have a hit song, right? If we have a song that goes viral, how do I make sure that we own every single piece of that, you know, that success? And so I went down a journey of trying to discover, what does it take to launch this band like a business on a platform? And that's what I did. And so I was also at the time working at a company when I was doing this. And I will never forget that. I think the last day at the job I had, this is a really tiny business. The woman that hired me, she loved me. She's like, you remind me of me when I was your age kind of thing. But I was taking like 2.5 hour lunches, writing songs and launching the band. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I was like, and I realized at that moment, I'm like, I have to change something, because it's not fair to the people I'm working for, and it's not fair to my vision and my dreams. And so that was the end of that job. And I basically, that day, I started my business at the time that was called Burke Design.
Yeah.
And I took the band to a whole nother level. And, you know, we ended up getting signed, getting covered in Mojo Magazine, which is like this huge publication. We traveled. I was able to run my business. I made a ton of money my first year out the gate. It was like the whole world transformed for me when I started when I took charge of my vision and my dreams and what I wanted to do. And it also gave me the flexibility I needed to explore and to experiment, you know. And, you know, back then, it was very different starting a business. You know, there, and I'm dating myself a little bit, but, you know, yeah, Amazon existed, which is which is amazing, because if Amazon wasn't there, we would not have been able to distribute internationally with our music. But social media wasn't there, right? So just imagine back in those days when I was starting my company, Burke Design, and my band, I was able to send a record to an art director, and they would listen to it, and they would put our song in a film or in an advertisement. I was able to pick up the phone and ask for the CEO and get a meeting to land an opportunity, right? And so it was beautiful to learn how to, you know, research and navigate and do listening and reconnaissance and all the things that you do on your own, you know, not necessarily looking at Google and, you know, trying to get data, but you're just getting your own data through, you know, the information you're getting in the world. And so that's really how I started all the things and how I sort of got on this path of, I can do all of these things and I don't have to have a large organization over me. I'm the organization. Right. And so that's really what started me on the path of all the things I'm doing now, which you mentioned earlier, you know, being a writer and continuing to have a band that still actually pays dividends now after 20 years. We still, you know, get royalties because of the way I set the company up, the band.
Wonderful.
You know, and I, yeah, so it's just, I'm really glad you asked that question in that context, because there's just so much we can do if we just put our minds to it. It just gets back to your intent. If you have the intent, you can do anything.
You can. And what I love about that story, Ginger, is that you started with a side hustle before side hustles were a thing, right? You know, which is cool.
Yeah.
And the science now on side hustles out there, I know a lot of employers are like, I don't want my team members doing side hustles. I want them focused on the job. But the science suggests that if someone is doing a side hustle, they come to work more productive. They bring more creative energy. They're building more confidence, swagger, whatever it might be. Now, that's not always the case, but your example, you ended up turning your side hustle into a series of businesses and a whole future journey, which is super cool.
Yeah. It was scary. You know, a little bit scary. It was probably more scary for my husband than it was for me.
Yeah.
I will say that there's some people that start businesses and they need a lot of inventory, equipment, supplies, products. You know, they have to have vendors to help them do things. So I'm in the knowledge economy business. So my startup costs are whatever I've got in my bank at the time is all I need, because what I really need is my brain and my strategic thinking and my drive and perseverance. Like, that's what I need. I don't have to, you know, try to find a supplier to get me the widget. And if I don't get the widget, I have no business.
Yes.
So there is that too.
There's freedom that comes with that.
And then, you know, then having to kind of, you know, be able to basically stand in the middle of the street naked, you know, looking for work and making cold calls and not being afraid of that and just keeping going even when you get a million no's. I mean, it's you know, the cold calling of today is not the cold calling of yesterday. You know, I had a human connection when I was able to build my business. And now it's very difficult to establish a human connection to actually get somewhere. Even when you go to networking events now, they're very curated. There's gatekeepers in places that never used to exist. You know,
and there's not as much curiosity.
What do you mean?
What do you mean by that? I go to a lot of events and everyone's there with an agenda. Where once upon a time, events that I went to, everyone was curious. They were eager to know, well, what do you do? And how could I help you? And how could you help me? But I've been to a lot of events, to your point on being curated, that it's too tight and it's all about one theme and people are coming because they want to win business or learn about one thing. So I like your call out on, hey, cold calling was easier and just connecting with humans was easier at a time. I'm hoping that that's not going to be the case forever. I'm hoping we've just come through a really weird bend in reality and we're coming back to more human.
A bend in.
Yeah.
I love that. We're in a bend in reality. I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, now when you go to places to meet other people, there is more of a, I don't know, more of a suspicion or distrust. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's when you watch old films, you look back at people on camera and there was a more innocence to their experience with the camera because the camera wasn't always there. So now the camera's always here. The microphones are always around. People are always recording. And so I think people are a little bit more on guard. And I do think people show up at opportunities, events with an agenda because there are so many barriers to them getting there in the first place that they have to get to their goal in order to, you know, consider whatever they're doing as success. So it's just, it requires a different level of strategic thinking and navigating. And I don't know, like, how do you get to that place unless you're in an environment that you can learn it? So I learned how to do a lot of business speak and business talk and navigating corporate spaces through my work at Anderson. Those years I worked in that corporation and other corporations I worked in before that really did teach me some skills that I was able to take to the launch of my own businesses. How does somebody do that now if they don't have that? How do you get that? And especially if you decide that you want to be an entrepreneur and completely bypass the corporate space, which some people seem to be doing now.
Yeah, effectively.
So anyway, it's just, I mean, there's a lot to it. I just think networking requires something very different. I'm very good at networking. And it's really because I don't have the fear of being naked and walking up to somebody. And I say naked, obviously not literally, but like being just whatever it is that I am, here I am. And let's talk. I don't have that sort of, that wall or that barrier that prevents me from walking into a room and not knowing a single person there.
Yes. Yeah. Which is interesting. I think in today's age of making connections and business development, because of the digital shift, I like your whole camera's always on construct. It takes a certain type of person that can just show up and make it happen. And what I'm hearing you say there as well, Ginger, is that timing was good for you, but also you came out with this wealth of confidence and experience from having worked for a large platform, knowing the corporate world before you hit it. For small teams that are trying to get started, maybe don't have that background or connectivity, I guess it shows you the importance of having that energy that you're bringing and that other people can bring on the team to just go out and you used a great word there, just kind of explore. You said in the knowledge economy, you rely on your brain and you go out and explore and experiment and find stuff. That's a great attribute. It's a great quality that we should probably all be welcoming into our teams.
So I have a question. Are you suggesting that when you're thinking about forming small teams that you do have to kind of look for people that have some of the gaps in your team? Yeah. I mean, is that what you're kind of saying? Like you know, you got to find some diversity in the people you're bringing on. And some 100%. People might be serving a role that doesn't necessarily align exactly with like the building of the thing, but maybe, you know, I mean, I'd love for you to expound more on it because I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I like the idea of, you know, because that also gets back to taking chances and trust, right? Finding someone that might not fit exactly into the hole that you thought they could, but you recognize that they can bring some value. So I'd love to hear more about that too.
Yeah, I find it a fascinating space. I've worked with a few great thought leaders and practitioners that go into rural, regional communities, economies, where there isn't a lot of this platform of education and working for large platforms like Anderson or Google. And yet they constantly go in and find that when you get a group of people together in a community, there's always capability, there's always passion, there's always creativity. And so bringing the right combination of people together onto that small team, that diversity of thought and approach is critical. There's one gentleman, Dr. Ciroli, who I've been working with for a number of years, and he simplifies it in a beautiful way. He's like, to make a team work, you need three things. You need a product person, someone who really looks at, well, what is it that we're trying to build and how do we build it and how does it help people? You need a marketing person, which is very much what I'm hearing from you, someone who's just going to go out and explore the ways that you could do it and who you could partner with and who might want to use it differently. And then you need a finance person. And he very simply says, if you can bring those three people and roles together, you've got the good footings and foundations of a team that's going to find success. Because if you just have a product person, you might build the best widget, going back to your earlier analogy, but you don't know where the widget fits in people's operating machines or otherwise. So you need the marketing person to go and explore and experiment and find out how the widget works. And we've seen so many inventions where, well, let's go back to the music industry. You know, when they first started creating devices for sound, they were designing them so that they could help people with learning and things like that. They didn't think of them as playing music. And it wasn't for a number of years until I think the designer of that device finally acknowledged, well, I've built something that can play music. He always thought he was designing something to help people learn a new language, you know. So we mm-hmm. see that time and time again through history too. So it's an mm-hmm. interesting mm-hmm. chemistry.
Interesting. Yeah. I think the other person I would add to the team would be a good lawyer.
Yeah. Particularly here in the US.
Yeah, you forgot the legal. I mean, you're like, okay, you got this. You got to turn my public account, the marketing, the product designer, but you got to have a lawyer.
Yeah, you do. You're right. And I think maybe I oversimplified, and maybe that sits under the finance person. Who knows? But, you know, product people need patents too, and in certain technologies.
Yes. Ownership.
Yeah.
Yes, that's protection of your intellectual property. Yeah.
I'm glad
you raised it. It's a real big deal.
It is a big deal. And I'm glad you raised the word ownership, because I was listening to one of your podcasts the other day and you started talking about how ownership became important to you and how you know, it's helped you in your career from the early days. I think you were saying from growing up and learning from your mom all the way through. Ownership and entrepreneurship and actually extending ownership to team members is a really interesting growing theme. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about how you've personally seen that and where you're hoping to see it continue to expand.
Yeah, ownership is I'm really glad you honed in on that aspect of my conversation, which is why I had that particular guest on my show to really talk about ownership in the supply chain. As a small business owner and an entrepreneur, and I mentioned this in the very beginning, it's important to me when I'm inventing and creating something of value. I'm not talking about when I'm creating something for a customer that's paying me to do it, but I'm talking about when I'm creating something for myself. I want to understand the landscape to understand how much of this can I build. And it's not a control issue. It's not a like, oh, I have to have everything for myself. You know, I need to be the one. Like, it's not about that. Because I know there are some entrepreneurs and business owners that sometimes to their demise, they try to control too many things and they don't delegate, which means they don't grow. I'm really talking about the concept of, you know, if you are a writer, for example, and you are thinking about putting together a book, this isn't the old days when there was three publishers and you had to find a way to get to a publisher to publish your book. There's just really no excuse anymore to not control your own intellectual property and invention. There's just no excuse. And if you have the intent to say, I want to own this, then you can figure out the path to make it happen, right? Mm. I had a conversation a couple of weeks ago. Her name is Dr. Dori Tunstall, and she has a book called Decolonizing Design. And she talked to me about her process of producing her book. And I was saying to her, I was really excited to see all the artwork and the design that she put into the book. And I said, you even have images of you in the book with your afro and things like that. And she told me the journey of how she published the book and how she, you know, hired specific people that she wanted. She insisted on cover design. She, you know, insisted on a whole litany of things to produce the book. And she said, but here's the thing, you know, you can't expect, you know, people to know this. I have, you know, education. I have this and I have these things and I have these people. And I stopped her and I said, hey, no, that is not true. The reason that you were able to own every ounce of this supply chain that you put together for your book is because your intent said, I want to own the supply chain. It's not because of your resources, because you knew that you wanted it. And so you found a path to make it happen. And so for me, I feel that that's really important. Like I said, if you're a writer, you can write your own book. You can, you know, put the book together. You can make your own ebook. You can start your own publishing company. You can own your own UPC codes, the barcodes. You can own the ISBN. Like, there's so many things to put it together so that you're not having to go to somebody else to say, get my book together. You're not having to be indentured to somebody else. free to publish your book. You don't need to have like a publisher that come out to come to you and say, oh, if you pay me, you know, $5,000, I will do this for you. You don't need to do that because first of all, you're not going to probably sell enough books to cover that $5,000 right off the bat, right?
Yeah.
You can do this when you're making, when you're making your own music or setting up a record, you know, label, which is what I did. You know, yeah. If you're making your own clothes, you know, there's different tools available for you to, you know, own your designs and you know, to own, you know, the like to even be on platforms that still enable you to own your own designs, but still use the platform to distribute, you know, your designs and things like that. So yeah. I kind of feel like, you know, as far as like taking this ownership conversation when you're inside of a corporation, it's challenging. It's very mm-hmm. challenging, right? So I have had conversations with women on my show, and I'm not here to promote my show because I'm on your show, but I have had conversations with women on my show that have invented things within a large corporation.
Yes.
And they have not been able to leave with that thing because the corporation owns the thing that they created. Now, there's two ways you can look at this. One, the person that creates something within a company understands when they're creating it, okay, I know when I'm putting this out here that my yeah. company owns this piece and I'm going to gather people at my company to help me build it. And I know that, you know, should I survive this company or not, this piece is not going to leave with me. But yeah. again, that goes back to the initial intent of you knowing when you go into the situation that I'm creating this thing at the company on their platforms, on their computers. And I know that it's not going to be mine. I'm not going to try to get it out. Right. Yeah. And you can do that. Or you can say, oh, I'm actually going to have a conversation with the internal legal counsel and say, hey, legal, I have this thing I want to create. And listen, I'm not giving financial advice. I'm not trying to get anybody fired, but you can go to legal and say, hey, or go to your boss and say, I have this yeah. thing I want to invent. I want to launch it here. What are my rights to be able to take this out of here or not? Like, I love this thing I'm creating.
Yeah.
I believe it has legs. Can I take it or not? And so, you know, if you understand what you're trying to do in the beginning, if you have this even a little bit of a vision and not, I mean, I love spontaneity, but there's sometimes you have to take a little breath and not be spontaneous and say, I need to be more intentional about what I'm doing. Because how about this one woman who started something at a large tech company?
Yeah.
She left and her piece got left behind, which is, she was fine with it. But you know what? She's an entrepreneur. She's an entrepreneurial yeah. thinking person. She went to the next company and you know what she did? She built something again. She did it again. She yeah. took her ownership mindset and she built it again within the company. So as long as you're intentional about things, then you don't feel like you're being taken advantage of or you don't yeah. get bitter. You know what I mean? So, and you know, the other thing too, around that other example I said earlier, the woman that built the thing, she knew when she was building it, it wasn't going to be hers. And she brought a whole team around her to help her, you know, bring it to life within the company. And yeah. it's actually taken on a life of its own. I mean, the team people that volunteered to help her, they've learned a lot. They've built their network. They have navigated through the ecosystem and they have their own visions of how to build things. So mm-hmm. there is something around, you know, not only the ownership piece, but also realizing the power that you have with ownership, whether you're working for a company or whether yeah. you're working for yourself.
Yeah, I really like that.
That was a lot. I know. That was a lot.
It's some complicated. Really good notes. It's complicated.
Yeah.
We make it too scary in the world. Like, mm-hmm. I think you made a great point, Ginger, in that, you know, as an employee, if I'm excited about building something that the company's going to use, why not go and have a conversation with legal or your boss and say, hey, I've got this idea. It's way out there. It's not in my current job description, but I'd like to build it. And I'd like to consider, you know, what resources I might need. Maybe do I get ownership in it? Or can I be put on the patent or whatever it might be? There's a spectrum of where you land on ownership. You know, being on a patent that the company uses, it's good for your muscle memory and for your accolades in the community. It might not give you royalties and other things, but you know, everyone's got to work out what they want. Some people aren't dollar motivated. Some people just want to say, hey, I was on the team that built this cool thing. So there's almost like two pathways mm-hmm. there. There's do you go out and own it from a tangible equity royalty standpoint, or do you own it in a project team setting? But it's cool.
Yeah. And I think too, what's what's beautiful about, like, so maybe you do create something internally at a company and it goes viral. Mm-hmm. And the company says, wow, this is actually good for our business. Because not only is it bringing people together in ways that we haven't been able to, you've brought them together for us. And yes. You're also representing yourself as a thought leader for us, which is adding value to our brand as well as your brand, which mm-hmm. also makes it so that the person that creates this thing, if they are fortunate enough to have it go viral, they're able to position themselves better for their next role, whether that is a role that they say, you know what, I'm going to have my own role, I'm going to start my own thing, or I have a package I can actually bring to show you what I built to the next job, which will actually, you know, potentially earn you even more money or better position in the next company. Yeah. So there's just, you know, ownership mindset. I wonder, like, because I was listening to this interview with Jane Fonda last night for some bizarre reason. And she was just saying, you know, some people are born with perseverance and some people aren't. And she believes she was born with that because she was raised in a very abusive household. And I sometimes wonder, you know, I feel like I've heard other thought leaders talk about this. Is ownership, is entrepreneurial thinking something some people are born with? Or do they develop it? Because I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that? Because I feel like I don't know what the characteristics are of a person that can make it through entrepreneurship and keep going.
Yeah.
Whether they're working inside of a company or not. Like there's something about that thinking.
Yes.
That is not like everybody else.
Yeah, it's a brilliant question, Ginger. And again, I draw back, there's so many guests that we talk about innovation disruption with, but I keep coming back to this Dr. Ciroli, who I'm going to have to introduce you to because you guys are going to have a blast.
Love to.
but Dr. Ciroli talks about entrepreneurship, the root of the language being intraprehende in Latin, which means to see something first, to be the early one to see it, how it might happen. So I think to be able to see something first, anyone, any human on any team is capable of seeing something that someone else isn't seeing. So I think it's remarkably democratized. I think in the current setting of our world, entrepreneurs who we put up on pedestals as having made it, you know, those who actually owned it and got recognized for it, they see something first and they're able to rally a team around them and funding and get customers and really bring it to life. But the entrepreneurship in and of itself, the essence of it, I think everyone can do it. And yes, we can build muscle around how you get better at bringing those ideas to life. But I genuinely believe it's there for everyone.
Wow. Okay. I'm not so sure, but I love your idea around it.
Well, tell me more on the not so sure, because I'm totally open to challenge and you're working with a lot of entrepreneurs. So I'd love to hear your perspective.
I mean, I think, you know, your question is like some people can be taught entrepreneurship. And, you know, and that's it. Like you believe people can be taught it and they can become it. And maybe people can be. I do think that an entrepreneur if they need a sense of safety, if they need to be safe, I don't know how you can be an entrepreneur if you need to feel safe.
Yeah.
You know, if you have this like, this desire and this need to not be scared. Mm-hmm. If you don't have necessarily a spontaneous approach to things, and if you have any aversion to any type of failure whatsoever, if you are devastated by a no, or if you're devastated by constructive feedback. If you're devastated by being in an environment where you're not accepted or you're rejected or, you know, you're like, whatever, getting bad vibes. If you can't withstand that part of it, then I don't know how you can be an entrepreneur. There's so many people that I don't know that they're able to really work their way through that, you know, and maybe it takes practice. Maybe, you know, maybe over time and over years, you can become an entrepreneur. But it's just not a safe space. Like it's just not safe being an entrepreneur. Not really.
100%. I agree.
I mean, cause you don't know. I mean, you don't know what, you know, you're depending on the industry you're in. Like I was talking to my banker the other day and, you know, the conversation was around recession. I was asking, are we in a recession? Are we not in a recession? And he was explaining to me, well, technically, we're not really in a recession. However, there is something that we've been thinking about called a rolling recession, which is it's happening in certain industries. There's certain industries that are having trouble and there's certain industries that aren't. And so I feel like there's just so much ambiguity around having your own business and being an entrepreneur. You don't really know what cycle you're in. You don't know what cycle's coming.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily know if what's happening in the global markets is going to impact your customers, which will then impact you. And so there's so much uncertainty that I don't know. Can you really be taught, how to be an entrepreneur if you are not comfortable with incredible uncertainty?
I think you're right. I think both exist together. And I think there's something really interesting in the middle, which we probably won't solve today, but it warrants a lot of investigation, which is, you've talked about the role of an entrepreneur in a more singular sense, an individual who's going to put their time and their income and their personal self, their anxiety and stress at risk, which I totally agree with. And that's what we see. And at the same time, some of what Dr. Ciroli talks to is entrepreneurship can be tackled as a team. And we can probably find constructs. I really like your example of going and asking your current employer if you can own something within the business. If we could find constructs that took away that ambiguity and the fear and the need to provide money and resources, then maybe we could see more entrepreneurial activity from more people. So my sense is that you're right in the right now. And I might be a little bit too optimistic, aspirational down here, but maybe we can pull the two together.
I love it. I mean, I consider myself an optimist, but I know that I've been an entrepreneur and a small business owner long enough. And I've seen people, I've seen people fail at entrepreneurship thinking they were going to make it. And I felt really bad about it for them. I felt like, you know what? It's tough, and they had to go back inside. I call it going back inside. They had to go back inside,
Sounds like going to jail.
To the corporation. I mean, to some people it is jail. I mean, other people it's not. It just depends on your perspective. You know what I mean? But I'm excited about anybody that decides to take a chance, and I'm also excited about anybody internally at a company, create something, because it's hard to create something in a company. I mean, a lot of people sneak around when they're being an entrepreneur. They're sneaking. And I think that if you actually have the guts to make something within especially a big old company, I mean, that's big.
It is big. Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with that. I think in the future, we're going to see, we've been working on some projects. One of them is called our Boundary Riders program. And we're seeing more of that in other businesses. But I think in the future, you are going to see corporate teams going out to ask employees, what is it that excites you that you think you could build that you think we don't have? I think you're going to see this like internal side hustle economy happen in businesses, but we're not there yet.
I love it. That would be amazing, because that would liberate a creative, entrepreneurial minded person to be free and to do things. You know what I mean? Like that would, I mean, can you imagine like a world where you didn't have to worry about, if you wanted to build a dream, you didn't have to worry about your healthcare.
Huge.
And like,
huge.
You know what I'm saying? Like it would take the pain away from inventing something,
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that would be beautiful. I mean, maybe I wouldn't have left corporate.
Maybe
if I
not.
Had that infrastructure, you know what I mean?
Maybe that's a really good call out for anyone who's listening to this, who's leading HR or leading a large business, to say, hey, you could keep talent like Ginger if you made it more accessible for them to own and build cool stuff in your business. That's a real thing, particularly in this world of, talent crisis that we continue to live in.
Exactly. Yeah. I love it. I love that idea.
Yeah. Like I said, we can go on and talk about that for hours, so we will come back to it off show. But you also used a word here that I want to dive into, because it's in the title of one of your books and one of your recent Fast Magazine essays, which is spontaneity. And that word excites some people and scares other people. But tell me about spontaneity in the work that you've been doing, both the book and the essay.
I am definitely a spontaneous person. I sometimes don't even like to plan. I just like to go and see what happens.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's a, that again is a mindset piece for me. There are people that plan and there's people that don't. There's sometimes there's people in between. And for me, and I go back again to trying to maintain and create freshness in your thinking and trying to be open to new opportunities and like new experiences and new cultures and whatever, even if it's food, although I'm not really spontaneous with food as much as I wish I could be. You know, I always joke to my husband, he's a fish eater and he likes eating wild animals. And I'm like, I don't like, you married the wrong woman. I can't eat boar. And I'm not going to eat, you know, I'm not eating salmon. Like, what is really, anyway. So, I do think that, you know, how to be spontaneous is a challenge for a lot of people. Because again, you get to this fear place, this place of fear of, I don't know what I don't know. I don't know the unknown. What's going to happen to me? Things like that. And I'll give an example. So of how spontaneous I can be. So when I went to Europe last year, I traveled to London and I was there actually because I was speaking at an event.
Uh-huh.
I decided to make the trip a little bit more than just speaking. I decided to just go to London and just do the thing and just go to London. So I did book a refundable plane ticket, which is always what I recommend to people. If you're trying to be spontaneous, get a refundable plane ticket in case you chicken out. And I actually wrote about this in my Fast Company article where I give strategies on how to try to be spontaneous specifically with travel as you're a business owner or entrepreneur. But anyway, I booked my ticket, didn't book my hotel.
Uh-huh.
Did not know exactly where I was staying. I just said, you know what? When I get there, I'm going to be in a different frame of mind than I am today here where I am right now. I don't know how I'm going to feel. I don't know what the weather's going to be like. I don't know what I'm going to want. So I got on my plane. I got on my plane to London. And when I landed in the airport, I then looked for, you know, a place to stay. And I booked it right there. And then I figured, okay, I'm going to stay here and I might move to this place too. So, and when I did that, it was scary a little bit, but it was also exciting because I thought, you know what? I'm here on an adventure. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't need to have 25 meetings lined up because I'm going to make meetings when I walk around. I'm going to find people and I'm going to interact and engage. I'm going to talk to people. I'm not going to be walking around with my cell phone, like, you know, looking at social media or trying to connect on LinkedIn. I'm going to have my phone in my purse and I'm going to go eat at restaurants. I'm going to sit and eat food. Maybe I'll have a book and talk to people and see what's happening and just sort of experience life that way. And this is how I'm going to think about, you know, how I'm going to not only potentially develop new business, which if I do, I do. If I don't, I don't. But it's going to, you know, create a different frame of reference for me and help me kind of maybe even enjoy, you know, my business experience a little bit differently than I would have if I had everything so regimented. Now, I realize that when a company is sending you on a business trip, you know, you do have to align yourself and address the needs of, you know, the purpose of your trip. And you have to do that. So there is something there where you've got to do the job that you were hired to do when you go out there. And believe me, I still did my job, but I also left a piece of myself extra so that I can, you know, have time to think and plan and just things come to me. And it actually happened. I made some interesting relationships and really got to learn about an industry that I knew nothing about because I met this person that was going to a book launch party, and I met these photographers that do street photography, and
cool.
You know, it just really added to my vision of creation and you know, thinking about art and music and people and cultures and food. It's something that you really need to do when you are on a grind. When you're on a grind, you have to find ways to break free. And sometimes forcing yourself to be spontaneous works. And here, I'm a person, I am married, I have children, and I still find ways to do this. And it's not easy. Like, it's not like, oh, let me just blah, blah, blah. Let me just run off and, you know, go on a cruise ship or hop on a plane, you know, to India. It's not super, super easy. It does take some, you know, it does take some courage and some strategic thinking. Like, let me just put myself in a quiet place and think to myself, can I do this? And then say to yourself, yes, I can. Like, you know, at positive affirmations, yes, I can. I can do this. I will be safe. I will be protected. I will enjoy myself. and then start visualizing yourself walking through the streets and meeting people and talking and looking at the sky. Just start visualizing things. And you can, you know, if you make that a practice, and it's not meditation, some people might call it meditation, but you can make it a practice and you can do things really interesting and possibly change your life. And then after I did this trip, I put together my blank journal, you know, with some ideas on how people can maybe think the way I think and go.
Yeah.
And I also, like I said, I wrote that essay and I do provide specific strategies for women. You know, women specifically, if women are traveling alone, they have to think a little bit differently about how they can move. And yeah. So I do have some ideas on how women can be safer, you know, traveling like that.
That's neat. And I want to dive into that a little bit more. We'll include a copy of the links. So you had the book, Believe You Can Leave, which was a spontaneous travel inspiration. So we'll include that link in the show. And the Fast Company Exit was, the Fast Company essay was Spontaneous Exit, A Guide to Wary Employee and Entrepreneurs. So that there's a lot of that going out there. I think people need to read both or have both. And I love the way you describe your experience because it ties in actually with a methodology that we've been building on the show, which is actually called the Show Method. And the O of the show acronym is Outside Influence. So by creating this opportunity to be spontaneous, go spend time in London, explore other people, you're absorbing that outside influence. What are other people doing? What might I learn from it? Who could I work with? And I think that helps us be less wary and more excited and more creative in business too. So it's definitely a superpower.
Yes, I love it. You put that so well. That's exactly it. And right now, I feel like we all need to find ways to live and experience positivity, you know, and we have to find the path to it.
Yes.
We have to look and find the path. It's not just gonna come at you. It's just not. Yeah. Like you've gotta be very intentional about finding that path to find joy because look, it's hard. I mean, whether you're working with someone else or working for yourself, I mean it's not getting any easier. It feels like it's getting harder.
So yeah.
You've gotta find your own ways to, you know, to make a difference in your own psyche and your own psychological, so physical state as you're navigating the world of work.
I couldn't agree more. And it's such a positive, exciting sort of pull through and draw into how we can all be thinking about our roles on teams and what we're doing for our team members. I love before the show, you were talking about Esther who helped you form your podcast and you were like, we're in the business of saving lives. We're bringing people into exciting new ventures that they could be a part of, exciting new career pathways. And that's really what we should be looking at it as teamwork, not just the day job that we have to do. It's an end.
Yeah, I like that. And I think some people forget whether they're working with themselves or others, that there are people that come into your world and you don't know what they're there for. You know, they're there looking for themselves, but oftentimes you can help them find their own new path and their own way, to live their lives. You know, you can share your expertise. And I wrote an essay in Fast Company on ageism. And one of my closing thoughts was that, you know, reverse the narrative that a young person is taking your job and maybe look at it as the young person could be teaching you something.
Yes.
That can help you be better and help you learn something new. And then also you can then go back and share with this young person who might be coming into your job or your employee system to help them be more successful. And Esther is a good example of that because she came to, you know, work for my company. She actually didn't originally come to work for my company. She saw me on Instagram and she's a photographer and she was on track for medical school to be a doctor. But she had beautiful photography work on her Instagram. I thought, oh my God, your work is really beautiful. What do you want from me? She said, you know, I just thought maybe I could, you know, offer to take some photos of you, some portraits. I'm like, okay. And so I brought her in and we had a meeting and, you know, I thought, wow, she's very intelligent. Number one, really, really super smart. I'm smarter than me, which you always want people smarter than you around or smarter than you around you when you're in a work environment because it helps you grow. And she, you know, I decided she came around with me for a day and I thought, oh my gosh, she's actually got a really good eye. She's beautiful with color and beautiful with structure and perspective. And I thought, you know, I'm actually going to bring her on. And so I hired her to come work with me for a little while. And she trailed me and took images and videos and helped me make some really interesting content. And during this process of what I actually, you know, it was a collaboration, although my vision for her was, my gosh, you're a super creative. And you're sort of giving signals to me that you don't really want to be a doctor. So let me see if there's something I can do to help you see the path of a creative life, because she'd never seen a creative professional life before. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was very reciprocal because I helped her see the ins and outs of running a business and the ins and outs of taking on clients and the risks and rewards. And people ask you to do this. Do you have the infrastructure to build it? And do you know what it takes to build it? And it was like one of these mind-blowing experiences for her where she said, wow, I didn't realize all these things were happening behind the curtain. I just thought, when you look at something on social media, that's it. And I'm like, no. There's a lot of risk here. You have to make sure you're protecting yourself and your interests. On the other hand, as I was working with her, she actually helped me recognize that just like you, all the sort of knowledge I have and the thought leadership and the strategies that I've developed over time, I could find an opportunity to share that and to help other people figure out how to navigate the world of work as an entrepreneur specifically. And so that's really how the Honest Yoga Guide podcast was born, because of this sort of collaboration between a very, very, very young green person, but a super creative and a very experienced, not green, super creative, how we came together and, you know, built something really interesting. And now, of course, this person is working at a major, major corporation, creating podcasts, videos, animations.
So cool.
She's completely changed her life, and she's not a doctor anymore. She's not going to be a doctor anymore. But I mean, she never probably wanted to be, but you know, it's just like, and I think, you know, when you're in a, like you said, a team environment, there's so much opportunity to share and help people.
Yes.
Like, not be greedy. Don't be greedy. Be generous. Be open. Don't feel like you have to get to give or give to get. You know, you just, you know, try to see each other and see the humanity and realize, like, I do have something to offer and I don't need anything in return. But maybe the return is that you're helping this person win, which helps you win too, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a removal of ego. Like, the ego has to be removed from the process, and just, you know, the ego has to be removed.
It really does. It really does. And I think that helps a lot of teams. It helps a lot of communities. And it helps people kind of go on their growth journey, which is so powerful. Well, this has been as I knew it would be, a fascinating, energetic exploration of ideas and your story and what it could be for people to be working on these highly creative, energized teams. So thanks for your time today, Ginger. There were so many takeaways around that creative energy, human connection, side hustles or internal hustles, and ownership and spontaneity. So I'm looking forward to re-listening to this, and I look forward to continuing to finding ways to work together.
I love it. Thank you so much for the conversation. And maybe you can use my band's music as your intro music. Utah Carol, our country band.
I'm all about
song.
Country.
No charge.
Yeah, let's do it.
No
let's
charge.
Do it. I'll get Alicia to follow up on that, because we can get a new jingle.
Yeah.
And I love collaborating on things like that. That would be cool. If other people want to come and find you, whether it's at Burke Creative, the Honest Field Guide podcast, your books, your essays, what's the best way for them to find you and connect?
Well, I know this sounds, I'm not trying to sound like arrogant, but if you type in my name, Ginger Birkenbuehl, on Google, you'll find all kinds of things, and you
Plenty.
Can take your own path and journey to learn about me and figure out where you want to go or how you want to connect
it.
With me. But my website is definitely excellent, burkecreative.com. That's always good. A really good, solid place too.
All right. Well, we'll add those links too. Well, thanks again for your
awesome.
Time today, Ginger. It was awesome.
Thank you so much, Dane. I appreciate it. I'm so glad I was here.
It was a blast.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,